I just want to share with you one point. It's not a beautiful thought for Moshe. So Paro says, "Kikolei kikolei do kulam kedushim kulam kedushim ubesechem Hashem." Madot is nasuah kahal Hashem. So Paro comes and argues. Paro, Korach comes and argues. It's one of those days. Korach comes and argues that everybody's holy, everybody's wonderful. And Madua, it means we can all, everybody will be able to figure it out themselves. Everybody has enough knowledge, enough information, enough connection to Kadosh Baruch Hu that they don't need the direction of Moshe Rabbeinu as the Rebbe, the one who's teaching them Torah. Okay? So it sounds, in a certain sense, similar to the world of the Stukim. The Stukim, where people, each person interpreted the Chumash according to his own understanding. There is no one monolithic understanding according to the Stukim. You read the Chumash and that's what you did. So there was no Masar of how to do it. It was just, that's the way it is. So the Gemara has such a story. The Gemara says that, the Gemara Kedusha in the third parak has a long story over there that Yanai HaMelech came from Beis Chashmonai. And Beis Chashmonai was, in the eyes of Chazal, after a certain point, because of what Hurdus had done, they were from Avadim, and they were not kosher the Kohanim, so they couldn't be Kohanim Gedolim. So Yanai HaMelech was told by the Chachamim that leave the Kohanim Gedolim and keep the Malchus. Like, well, let's not, you know, let's stay away from the Kohanim Gedolim. He didn't like that, obviously. So he was upset at the Chachamim. So he wanted to kill them. So he was talking to one of his advisors, a person named Eliezer ben Poira, something of that pronunciation. And he says, kill them. He says, but what's going to be with the Torah? So he said, the Torah is available. There's a safer Torah there in the corner. Everybody can read it. So Morris says, at that moment, Nisrgo by Minas, he should have said, excuse me, that's very nice for Tarsha B'Sav. What's with Tarsha B'Alpeh? You need the Chachamim. But he said, you're right. The Chumash is available. I don't need anybody else. I can just figure this out myself. And he killed out all the Chachamim, except for Shimon Ben Shotach, was hidden by his, Shimon Shotach's sister was the queen. And she took her brother, Shimon Ben Shotach, and she hid him. So the Gemara goes to this conversation where a person came along and said, we don't need a teacher. We don't need somebody to teach us how to do it. We can figure it out ourselves. So Rambam ties this argument that Korach is saying back to that Gemara. But then he takes it a step further, which I think is a fascinating point. He says that this is not only true in the Tarsha B'Chsav. Thank you so much. Appreciate it. Thank you.
I did not stir.
Okay, thank you. That this is true in Tarsha B'Alpeh as well. Right? A person comes along and thinks that I don't need anybody to teach me how to learn Tarsha B'Alpeh. I could sit there and figure it out myself. The same way Chazal are faulting, if a person comes along and says, I don't need Tarsha B'Alpeh. I have Tarsha B'Alpeh that's good enough. I'll figure out all the details. To believe that you can figure out Tarsha B'Alpeh without a Rebbe is also a mistake. Without a Masar is also a mistake. So it comes along and says that, you know, I don't need a Masar to teach me how to learn Tarsha B'Alpeh. I can learn, there's all of Shas, all of the Svarim. I'll sit down and I'll figure it out myself. I was once reading a story about a person who did something along those lines. And eventually he, you know, made contact with some great Tzemach Chachamim, and they said the first thing they had to do was they had to unlearn him, like everything that he learned, because he had learned it, but he had learned it based on the way he figured out what made sense, how to learn it. And the same way that there is the Masara of the Torah, of Tarsha B'Alpeh, there's a Masara how to learn Tarsha B'Alpeh as well. So Ramosha faults somebody who comes along and claims he can do that. That's a Korach moment. You know, you have a Kodak moment. Remember that you used to have a Kodak moment? This is the Korach moment, right? The Korach moment, the person comes along and says, you know what, I don't need. I had a story when I had a young man was in my shir, I don't know, 15 years ago. Intelligent guy, thinker, but he liked coming up with his own explanations of the Gemaras. And once in a while, he would come up with a very nice thought. But a lot of times what happened is that he would come up with a thought which was like, in his thought process, it all made sense. But that's not how you learn a piece of Gemara. So one time he says, how do I know, he says to me, that you're right, maybe I'm right, how to learn a piece of Gemara. I said, yeah, it's a possibility, right? I said, but part of the reason why I spent some time learning by my Rebbeim was to pick up the proper way to approach a piece of Gemara. What's a valid Svara, what's not a valid Svara? So can I tell you, can I quantify by definition what's valid, what's not valid? No, I can't, right? But that's part of the Masara which we have from generation to generation of how you're supposed to learn a piece of Gemara. Right? So if you want to challenge that, that's fine, you know, but trust me that that's not how you're supposed to learn a piece of Gemara. So he backed off. And eventually, you know, we got him to, you know, within the fold. But there's a fascinating book which came out recently by an individual scholar, where he's addressing, the point he's addressing really is there a source in the Chazal for making a person an apikoros based just on thought process, without any actions, etc.? No, just on beliefs alone, which the Rambam clearly says that there is. And he wants to argue that the Rambam, that there's no source of the Rambam in the Gemara. And the Rambam didn't really mean that, based on other sources of the Rambam. He says, I am going against all of the rabbis until now. They don't really know how to learn anyway, because they weren't scholars in college. But I went to college, you know, I have the degree, you know, this, and I've studied how to learn the Talmud properly. And all the rabbis up to this generation, they all got it wrong, and I got it right. And I'll prove it to you that I'm right, because there's two other scholars who live nowadays who also said all the rabbis are wrong. So, right, they understand better. So I have waited into the realm which nobody else thought of. Right? All the old generations, nobody else thought of it. And therefore, that this idea that you become an Epicurus based on just thought alone, it's not true. The realm never meant that. And I've solved all the world's problems, right? So now, you could be a person who has non-kosher hashkafas and still be a kosher Jew, and that's okay. So I've dunked you into the mikvah and made you kosher, right? That's the purpose of the book. And he's right. He definitely learns differently than all the rabbis, right? Now that he has the hubris to believe that he's smarter than all the rabbis which existed until now, and he's the only one who figured out the solution. That's part of academia, is that, you know, what everybody else until now didn't get, and I got it. We come up with the new idea which nobody else thought of until now. So I think I mentioned to you I had this story that took place a little while back. There's an individual who likes pointing out fascinating different nuances, discrepancies in the text and the Chumash at different points. He develops a theory to understand things based on that. They call it creative parshanut, is the approach. And a lot of times it does not fit with the way Chazal seems to understand it. He's saying, you know, Chazal, they're mahalach, and they have his mahalach. That's what he wants to say. So I heard a presentation on his part from somebody. He presented, you know, and it was by, you know, video conferencing. He wasn't there. But so afterwards, somebody asked me what I thought about it. I said, you know, if the Gedolei HaMefarshim and Chumash in the last 1,000 years, nobody thought of this pshat, that he's the one who uncovered all these nuances in the text and nobody else noticed, and came up with this new pshat that nobody else thought of until now, is very suspect by me. So the person who asked me the question was a person who was a big fan of this fellow. So he said, I mean, in Gemara also, like, that's, you know, when you come up with the pshat that nobody else thought of, that's the geshmak. You come up with your own pshat that nobody else thought of. So that's what he asked me. So I told him, you know, when I was younger, I thought like that also. Right? The Hanoah that it's your pshat and nobody else thought of it. It's yours, and you know, you're the Mechadish. It's like, wow, it's like this rush of a moment. It says, the older I get, the happier I am of finding out saying a pshat, which somebody else actually did say. Because I got to the point in my life where I realized, if nobody's saying it, there's probably a good reason why nobody said it. You know, maybe I found the one thing which Rosham left for me to discover which nobody else thought of. Maybe. Or maybe I'm totally off, and that's why nobody else said it. You know, when you travel when you're traveling a good path, you know, usually it's used by other people as well. When you're going on this little narrow path through the right, there's a reason why nobody else used that path. Right? I found the way to approach this thing, and nobody else thought of it. I got it. You know, I said I grew out of that. That's what I told the fellow. This wasn't what he was expecting in the response, because he was coming from the angle of, you know, it's great to think of your own pshat, and I'm saying it's not great to think of your own pshat. It's great to understand in the path of those who've come before you. So this idea that this fellow has come up with the pshat in all of these chazals, etc. So in the latest edition of, there's a magazine called Dialogue. Very nice. It's comes out approximately once a year, longer essays on various different topics in Yiddishkeit, which require the person to actually engage their mind as opposed to be entertained. It's not entertainment. It's like deeper type of articles. So it's not than the standard Jewish magazine style nowadays. It only comes out once a year because it can't sustain itself financially. If it come every month, people wouldn't be able to... it doesn't have a large reader base, but he has an article there which responds to this individual's book about the sheet of the Rambam, etc. And he has a long article about pointing in the book itself, A, discrepancies that he didn't notice, B, how there's the points that he's saying building on his own arguments don't really stand so well, and C, the fact that nobody else had said it until now is something of tremendous significance. So what Marsha is saying is that there is a concept of Masora of how to learn Torah. You can't just jump in and say, you know, I'm going to learn Torah according to my own. Now, it doesn't mean that each person doesn't bring their flavor to the conversation. And they'll notice things based on their background, etc., which somebody else didn't notice. And they'll see the nuances, etc. But seeing the nuances and noticing something, on the one hand, and the idea of saying, okay, based on that, I'm going to create this whole theory of what everything said and make everything fit, when the people who didn't use that approach were masters of their field. I don't understand the words. But Marcia said, for example, that he finished all of Shulchan Aruch with the Prima Gadim 400 times. I don't understand the words. I haven't finished Shulchan Aruch once yet. He finished it 400 times. Now, I do believe after the 50th time it gets easier. Right? You know, so it gets like, you know, after a while you just get into a groove, you know? Right? But what does it mean to finish something 400 times? And I come along and say, you know, I figured out something that Ramosha finds she didn't figure out. That's a possibility. Right? Okay, well, but it's improbable. It's not. Probability is that, you know, the reason why Rashi didn't say that because he was aware of, you know, looking at the page over here, we've all learned Gemara, we've all learned Shulchan Aruch. And you look at the page where you're at, and you say a pshat which fits the pshat, everything over there. Then you realize that's very nice, but the sugya comes up three other places in Shas. And also comes up mentioned in the Tosis in the fourth place. And mentioned in a Rashba in a fifth place, and mentioned in a Rabban in a sixth place. And if you know all of that, you realize what you just said makes no sense. Well, you don't know, you're blissfully ignorant of all of that, so you said a pshat, which fits beautifully in the sugya, right? But the more you learn, the more you realize that, my gosh, this doesn't make any sense. So, and we know that whatever we say has to be consistent. It has to be totally consistent with everything which we're going to find. So the probabilities are, the reason why they didn't say it is not because they didn't think of your wonderful idea. They thought of it and they discarded it because they're aware of the fact that it doesn't fit in the other sources where this comes up. But I'm not aware of that. So I'm you know, I would look at the Gemara, it makes a lot of sense, you know. Right. So the So Korach comes along and says, listen, Moshe Rabbeinu, we don't need, even in day one, Moshe Rabbeinu went to Har Sinai, the Rishon taught him there. Means the Rishon gave over to Moshe Rabbeinu an approach of how to understand, how you're supposed to approach learning Torah. What's a good svar and what's not a good svar. And Korach comes along and says, I don't need you. I can figure it out myself. That's already the source of the problem. So the source of the problem is that he was willing to say, I had directed the will from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. I know exactly what he meant. Now, the Russian gave you a directive of X amount, and the rest he's giving to Moshe Rabbeinu. No, we don't need that. We can figure out the rest ourselves. So Chazal, you know, obviously look at Korach from that vantage point and say that's, you know, that there's an element of, it came from jealousy, it came from gaiva, whatever the points that it came from. If not to make this about contemporary societal issues, right? But yesterday we had the Zoom program, the shul reopening. I forgot the official title, what it was. Back to the shul, you know, thoughts about the reopening of our shuls. So the host was Mr. Lewis Mayberg. And he started with I was very impressed. His hosting was done very respectfully. He spoke for 2 or 3 minutes, you know, 2 minutes, and passed it on to the rabbis. It wasn't his job to be a speaker. His job was to be a host, right? But he made a comment. He says that the amount of opinions that we have in regards to the reopening are equal to the amount of Jews that there are in the neighborhood. Everybody has their opinion exactly how it should be opening, how quickly, how slowly, how much, how little, who should go. Everybody has their opinion, and they're convinced that they're right. And he didn't belabor the point. He just says, you know, that was like his political comment on, you know, on the issue, political analysis from all sides, you know, right? And then he passed it on to the rabbis to speak. And that wasn't the topic of the Rabbanim, etc. But it is an area which is very challenging. You know, what is the right pace to open? You know, how much did you listen to the doctors? How much do the doctors really know? You know, the whole thing is confusing. Maybe we should just ignore the doctors totally. Maybe we should listen to everything, every word the doctors say. The doctors aren't experts of the economic issues. Maybe we should listen to the people who are economists. That maybe we should look people which are social scientists. Who's right? Who's wrong? How much? How little? Right? So I had an individual which told me that I've used a fairly conservative approach in this issue, which basically says, you know, I'm dealing with an issue which I have no knowledge. I don't have first-hand knowledge of this, and I don't think I can have first-hand knowledge of this. Right? The amount of information which would be necessary to try to understand this, it's not there yet. Right, so I use the klalim which we find in Halacha. I said that you now I understand that information might change. Right, nowadays we have a lot of information about the world of Rafua. Tremendous amount of information in the world of Rafua, which we didn't have 100 years ago. So when a rav had a paskin shadow which had the came regards to pikuach nefesh on Yom Kippur on Shabbos etc., where the person should eat non kosher food etc., part of his job was to talk to the doctors. So now we know the doctors were totally off. They misunderstood the whole thing. So the Rav didn't do the right thing? Of course he did the right thing. That's his job. His job is to talk to the doctors and use the medical knowledge which is available at that time to make his decision. The medical knowledge might change. So what the doctor said, you know, so listen, I know nothing to medicine, but since medical knowledge might change, I'll assume X because it might be right. That's not what the halacha requires you to do. The halacha requires you to use information that you have and make a decision. That is the right decision. And a matter of fact, that the Russia might decide to be murdered by the person based on that, even though in 100 years from now, that'll kill you. Right then, it doesn't kill you. Because that's what Allah said to do. Right. In 100 years from now, when new knowledge has come, and they say that's very bad for you, a person does that, well, 100 years ago, my great grandfather did that based on the Rabbi Hillel, and he had a great recovery. Well, nowadays you're going to die from it. What changed? Right? It changed what is Allah requiring you to do. The refuah is not from the refuah. The refuah is from the Kodesh Baruch Hu. And the Kodesh Baruch Hu requires you to go through the process of Ishtadlus by listening to the doctors. So if this information the doctors have right now, that is the right answer. It might change things not to now because, you know, Rabbi's going to change something, so let's ignore the doctors. That's not true. Well, so a person says to me, he understands Das Torah is that you listen to the doctors and then you use your seichel to figure everything out. So, like, in City X, that's what they did. But over here, we're like, we're wimps and we're not willing to make these decisions. He didn't say it in the word wimps, but because he was talking to me. But that's what he was thinking, So I said, listen, I respect your thought process that, you're very impressed with the doctors in City X. I have the rabbis in City X. I happen to know the rabbis in City X didn't want to do what they did, but they did it because they were pressured by the Balabatim and they're afraid that if they didn't do that, it didn't make some type of some element of concession to the requests. The result would be they wouldn't listen at all, and that would be 10 times worse. So that which you're looking from the outside and saying, well, it's because of the rabbis are, willing to make a big stand. That wasn't the reason, right? So we're dealing with something which we don't have a handle on. We don't, right? So why is it that right now we're seeing increases of cases at an astronomical rate in Florida and Arizona and Texas? And New York City, which was the epicenter of the whole thing, it's the numbers are going down, right? Does it make any sense? No. Immunity, what was the level? Was it really herd immunity in New York? Hard to believe. Herd immunity is about 80%. So what's going on? We don't know, right? So in some Jewish centers in the tri-state area, it's like they're living as if this whole thing didn't exist anymore. It's gone. It's history. There's no social distancing. There's no nothing. And over here, we're still, wearing masks and, limiting the amount of people into the shul. They're doing nothing. It's like, yeah. Right. Right. So could be the there is herd immunity over there. It's a possibility. I don't know. I have no idea. I don't know what the doctors are saying. I don't know what the doctor's recommending that, but at some point in line, these people don't care, right? So there are a lot of different opinions on how to deal with this thing. Somebody asked me, so what do I think? I says, I think that I don't know. That's what I think. Like, how am I supposed to know? So what are you supposed to do when you don't know? So that's the halacha. You listen to the doctors. Now, a doctor comes along and says something which I know is dangerous for a person. He says, no, it's good for the person. I don't listen to him because I know that it's dangerous. But if I have no idea, the doctor says it's the right thing to do or whatever it is, I listen to the doctor. That's what Allah says to do. Now, what will be the results? That's the person's business. The chiyuv is ishtadlus. Right? The Torah says that the ishtadlus is done based on what the doctor said. That's halacha. So I'm following halacha. Right, so he said, well, but what do you think? I says, how am I supposed to think? Like, what tools do they have? Well, listen to all the information, and, read up on it. It says, excuse me for being. Where am I supposed to get this information from? The news? I don't trust one word of what's on the news, in either direction, because till about a month ago. So the liberal media was saying that the apocalypse is coming. Every person's going to die, a horrible death if we get within 15 feet of each other. And the conservatives are saying we got to open up because of the economy. Now the liberals are saying we got to get together out there and hug each other and support the protests, and that's the right thing to do. And the conservatives are saying, you can't do this, So. And they have facts and figures to prove it. Sweden was a good idea. Sweden was a bad idea. You know, Georgia, you know, was the first to open. Georgia had a spike in numbers. Georgia never spike in numbers. It's because of this reason, because of that reason. I don't believe a word they say in the news. So how am I supposed to know? LMI what? I can go to the experts and ask them to give me all of the information that they have. And I get a degree in medicine, a degree in epidemiology, a degree in data analysis in the next span of the next week. And then I'll be able to decide what to do on my own. Right? You know what? I don't have the time to do that. I don't think I have the ability to do that. So what does halacha want me to do at that point? So it comes whether I eat in Yom Kippur or not, the doctor I trust. It comes whether I want to tell the person to go to eat non-kosher food, the doctor I trust. Whether a person should be mechallel Shabbos or not, and they drive to the hospital, the doctor I trust. Whether we should wear masks or not, doctors are stupid. So what if there's a machleikus? And what if there are clothing, what to do if there's a machleikus? So there's a lacha, you go basa mumchim, right? So if you have two doctors, one doctor says, you know, do surgery, one says, no, don't do surgery. Now the doctor says, do surgery, is the top specialist in the country, and he's been seeing cases, he saw 80,000 cases of this. The guy says, don't do surgery, is the guy who just graduated from medical school, and he just got his, and he's studied three cases of it. So who do you listen to, right? So I have a doctor in New York who says, you know, I think it's okay. Okay. Is he doing all the research? Is he involved in the information? No. Okay. So now, do I think that, you know, that everything, that the doctors don't have their own agendas? I don't know. I have no idea, but that's irrelevant. But the doctor has an agenda that's person's eating Yom Kippur. It's a possibility, right? But over here, you're dealing with something which we happen to be blessed, Baruch Hashem, with people which are in the thick of the research in Washington, D.C., in NIH, dealing with these issues. And they're coming back and saying that it's not over yet, there's still danger, you have to be careful. Right? Are they being overly cautious? So they're being overly cautious. How do I know that? How am I supposed to measure that? Okay, so, you know, but what's with the economy? You got to live. Okay, so we have to understand that, you know, yes, it's a difficult balance, and the doctor's job is not to figure out the economy, right? That's not his job. His job is to tell you what the medical issue is, and now somebody else has to come along and balance that against the mental health issues and all those issues which come with that. We're not ignoring that. But to say, listen, you know what? The doctors are stupid. And they don't know what they're talking about, because I was in New York, and I tell you, nobody was hurt. It's a riot, Brura, that must be that they're all the idiots. It's a riot, Brura, that you're an idiot. You want to ask me what I think it is, right? It's a riot, Brura, that you're not thinking, because you have no medical background, you have no understanding, and you've seen something happen. It must be. You know, I think it means that Russian was nice to the Yidden and did an ace. You know, but that's what it means to me. You know? Kent Mill, 4 weeks, 5 weeks ago, 6 weeks ago, we spoke about this. Says there was Montgomery County, Prince George's County, were the two counties in the state which still had the highest level of cases happening. We're living within 1 mile of that, and there wasn't one new case in Kent Mill. What's wrong with everybody? Why aren't they opening up? Instead of getting out a public day of Halavah Hidor, the Russian did an ace for our community. I know why. It must be the whole thing is ridiculous. Really? You know, Mr. Milikowski is saying that she was sitting there in the emergency room in the ICU, and the cases are increasing. It's like a war zone. She comes home and it's momish, like she's living in a different world. Texas, we're not living it, so we believe it's not true. You know, I mean, it's, you know, it's like if you don't see it, you don't know it. So I believe the correct answer. Maybe I'm wrong. I believe the correct answer is that because we don't know, and nobody knows. The doctors don't know either. But that's the doctors have the best ability to understand the information. If they're saying that the correct way to deal with this is, yes, we can open up, but there should be limits and there should be masks and there should be social distancing, so we have a way to open the academy which in a safe way, say, what do you need it for? Because Dr. Ridiculous, I'm going to take off my mask and, you know, hug everybody. Like, because, you know, I'm sure God loves that. You know, okay. You know, it's the flower childs of the 1960s. You know, like, you know, if that's my understanding. It's not coming from a statement of I know. It's from a statement of being willing to admit I don't know. And when you don't know, there are klolim how you deal with something when you don't know. The same way the person who comes to the Gemara and says, you know, I'm going to figure out the Gemara and I'm going to get what nobody else figured out. I'm going to figure it out. We look at the person and say, what's your problem? Like, where are you coming from? There's a way to deal with these things. Right? So in this world also, there's a way to deal with these things. They're bottom in a different city, doing differently. That's not my job to answer that question. Right? I haven't spoken to them directly. I don't know what their thought process is. I could be mashar with the thought process, but I don't know. Maybe the thought process is they think the whole thing's ridiculous. Maybe the thought process is they think it's very significant. But Shem Psoi Mashem, we reached the Madrega of Shem Psoi Mashem. Shem Psoi Mashem is a fascinating concept. Shem Psoi Mashem means, yes, it is totally dangerous. But when society gets the Madrega of ignoring it, so the first 3 million will die, but the next million will be safe. That's Shem Psoi Mashem means. Zemur says that if a person would do mila, bris mila, without the north wind blowing, the child would die. Okay, fact. Right? Zemur didn't make it up. It means it happened. But Zemur says, but nowadays that everybody ignores it, Shem Psoi Mashem, the Russian was willing to keep an eye on idiots. So now you're not mechuyev to worry about it anymore. Right? So. We'll argue that right now we're in that flux. Yeah, at some point in our lives, Russia's going to say the society will reach a point where it's unsustainable to keep it closed like this, and the society will make a decision. We're going to live with this anyway, and we'll take. Then the Russian will say, "Fine, Shem Psoi Mashem." But till that happens, you got to lose a few million people along the way. Till that happens, so we're not supposed to speed up the process. Now, maybe you'll tell me that the people live there. But they said, you know, they reached the Madrega of Shem Psoi Mashem already. I can live with that. But it's nothing with me. Just because in Lakewood they reached Shem Psoi Mashem, because everybody and their bubby had it already, that means that it's safe for me to do the same thing in Silver Spring. Where's the thought process? So, you know, Mr. Mayberg made this comment, like, you know, there's a lot of different debate about this thing, and people are debating it hotly, and they're upset about it. Like Jews tend to do, right? The famous line from, you know, from Ben Gurion to President, was President Truman, President Eisenhower, right? That, you know, he has a more difficult, he says, you know, ruling over the million Israelis. He says, I have a country of 150 million people. He says, yeah, but I have a country of 101 million presidents. You know, everybody has their own opinion, like if they are the only, you know. So, I don't think there's a din of raib over here. I don't think there's a din of busa raib over here. What? I don't think there's the luck. I have to follow the raib of the rabbanim in different cities. I understand, but I'm also wanting medical advice. The biggest mumpkin are the people in NIH which are studying this thing. And I have people in my community, like Theo Heller, who works there, and Hirsch Kammerer, who worked there. So I'm not hearing it secondhand. The doctor in Cleveland is hearing it secondhand. Right? He's hearing it firsthand from the research. So I don't think it was kosher with the doctor in Cleveland, or the doctor in Baltimore, or the doctor in New York. Like, why is he the mumpkin? Right? Every single medical shaila which I have, I have two doctors that I go to. Now all of a sudden, I should listen to the doctor in New York. Really? All of a sudden, he's not my doctor anymore. He's not the person I trust his expertise. He doesn't have expertise anymore. Okay, so, you know, somebody else has a right to ask a different doctor, but my job is to ask the person that I always use, because I have respect for his understanding and his knowledge. Exactly. And when you don't know, what do? I understand. And what do you do when you don't know what to do? Okay, exactly. So I'm following Allah. So tell me, I don't know. But the Rav doctors, like, I don't trust the Rav doctors because I don't know what the Rav, there's no Rav. It's good. So what am I supposed to do? So, I understand that. I understand. You know, yes, it is a hard question, but at this point in time, I don't think we're grappling. I think that the society is opening up enough that we're not dealing with mental health to the point of suicidal thoughts, and we're not dealing with, and elective surgeries are permitted, so we're not dealing with that anymore. So that's a relevant question. So we could theoretically do that, but that we don't have the power to do that in our society. Agreed. I'm not. That's not our conversation. I'm not. But the same time, the latest data of admissions to ICU is not people in their 60s. The average age of a person. It's people in their 40s, which means we don't know enough information about this thing yet. I understand that, but I don't have the power to do that. I don't have that power. But I do have a recommendation of how that they're asking us to be noyig, wearing masks and keeping social distance. That I have the power to do. And that I should ignore that recommendation and limit gatherings. Let's make a minion factory and put 75 people on top of each other, breathing down each other's necks. I wouldn't recommend that. That's all I'm saying. What? No, that's why I'm not in Lakewood. Lakewood has extreme mileage. I love Lakewood. It has extreme mileage. It's a city of Torah, which there's nothing like it anywhere else in America. Lakewood is also an extremely difficult place to live because everybody has a day. It's one of the most difficult places in the country to be. If you want to be a rav, first you have to be trying the Talmud Chacham to be a rav over there, because otherwise they're going to eat you alive, right? But even so, even if you're Tzvan, they still eat you alive because of somebody else who made a tremendous amount of research on a certain topic, and he holds the core that this is the way it is, and you pass it otherwise, he'll tell you publicly to you and to everybody and the whole city behind your back that you're wrong. Well, maybe you are, maybe you are, maybe you aren't, you know, but that doesn't increase the cover for the Rabbanim over there. You know, so the Rabbanim don't have no power over there. They have no power. They have limited authority. And if the Tzibur doesn't want to do it, they have no way to impose them on the Tzibur to do something. They can give shmuzah and they can, you know, etc., but they don't have authority. So this is a reality over there. People decided it. Yeah, and so they reached a point where they think the people which are being careful about it are crazy. Okay. And I don't think it's so crazy. That's all I'm saying. But, you know, maybe they're right. I don't know. I have no idea. But maybe they're wrong. And I know what the Klalim are to do when you're in a Suffolk. So to say that they have reached the state of that they're Vadai, I find that extraordinary. The Vadai is difficult to reach a Vadai. It's still evolving. The formation is still evolving. Yes. So we should go to the extreme which we went to. There is a collateral damage, and yes, and you have to balance the thing, and there's chances that you're taking. And that goes to the Shomer B'Shalayim Hashem. But how far do you take it that I should reopen to the point of that there's no social distancing and there's no masks, right? Why shouldn't everybody be wearing a mask? What's the problem with wearing a mask? They come out now that wearing the mask is more effective than the social distancing. So what's the problem with everybody wearing a mask? You want to go out about your business, but wear a mask. What's the problem? It's uncomfortable. You know what? Walking around with stockings is uncomfortable. Walking around with sneeistic. What? But that's part of Yiddishkeit. You know, we live with it. You know? So, like, I don't understand. You want to say, you know what, social distancing is difficult. We have a city which is very crowded. We don't have a place to put everybody. What are we supposed to do? Okay, maybe yeah, maybe no. But what's stopping you from wearing a mask? Well, throw out the masks also. Why? Give me an argument. Well, because the whole thing is ridiculous. So we're back to the whole thing is ridiculous argument. So I haven't been convinced the whole thing is ridiculous yet. Listen, I'd be happy to be proven wrong. I really would not want to be proven right. Right? They're worried about a possibility of a second wave. Hopefully they're wrong. And I would let the vindicated and proven that I'm right. When Baruch Hashem, people will get sick and die. Now I see I'm right. I don't need that. I'd rather I'm wrong. And we'll say it's a raya that they were right. Okay, you know, so I'll have to swallow my pride. Right? But that's not the issue. The issue is over here. What is the halakha they're supposed to do under the circumstances? When it's a suffix, how is anybody evaluating in these circumstances? So, Prince asked me because Das Torah is able to figure it out. I said, okay, so I don't have Das Torah. So I never claimed that I did. You know, people come to me, they want Das Torah. I tell them, I said, you come to the wrong address, and now you see that I'm right, because you Das Torah says that everything is one is okay. And I couldn't figure that out, so I don't have Dastara. So my point is proven. I don't have Dastara. That's what I told the person. He didn't like that answer. But, you know, the Jews have, you know, I have to tell you that New York City is very hard. You know, you live in a situation where you can't take anything, over there it's so politicized, you can't take anything seriously. I don't judge them. You know, like, why should they believe anything that they're being told by the city, etc., when the city itself is doing the exact opposite for their things? So you do for your things, I'll do my things, you know, like, you know, I get it. But that doesn't mean that's right. I get where the emotion comes from. You know, you have a mayor who is condoning protests of people being right next to each other because that's a real reason. But for religiosity, that's not so important. So the yid says, okay, you know, if that's your attitude, I'll do it. But I get the emotion, I get the feelings. That doesn't mean it's right. Doesn't mean it's Torah. You know, I don't think that. You know, if a person wants to be honest, it was a difficult time. It was. And there was a lot of things which, there's people in that book which found it very difficult. But a lot of people probably had tremendous growth they never would have had in their lifetime otherwise. Growth in introspection, and in tefillah, right? People are going to look back later on in their life and say, that was a difficult time, which I learned so much from about myself, my resilience, creativity, kuvvet to Kadosh Baruch Hu, tefillah. You know, I'm not saying that's why Rashi did it. But let's not write it off that it was like this, like, you know, it was this massive decision which we're like, we should have, you know, rescinded it, and the whole thing's ridiculous, you know. Okay, everybody, say it's late. You know, hopefully we'll be zeicha that the whole thing should be behind us, you know, in the near future. The latest thing that's coming out tells me that if you're out in the summer sun could kill the virus over a certain amount of time in the sun. You know, latest research. Okay, will that work for the winter? I don't know. You know, there is a reduction of the coronaviruses in the summer. That's why colds are less common in the summer than they are in the winter. That also means that the fact that right now it's doing better doesn't mean that everything's going to be the same in the winter. Hopefully, it will be. Hopefully, there won't be a problem. Right? There's conflicting research. Some research says that the virus has weakened. Some research says the virus has become more contagious. You know, so which one's right? Who knows? But if that's true, that the common cold, which the coronavirus is akin to the common cold in general, is weakened in the summer, so we don't know what the winter is going to look like yet. And if Chas v'Shalom, anything should be like that, but if people who accepted that we need to listen to medical advice, right now it might look like they're crazy, but 6 months from now, in December and January, it might look quite different. Because the people who decided not to take medical advice might, chas v'shalom, be in a very difficult situation when there's a second wave in the fall, if there is one. Hopefully there won't be. I'm not wishing on anybody. Just pointing out that this is a long-term picture, which we don't know the answers yet. And thinking we've figured it all out by now is a dangerous place to be. Because who's going to give you your advice? And what and every single piece of medical advice has been went back and forth. And the doctor said, I'm sure it's not a problem. I looked into it. Might say something, you know what, I was wrong. He might say that. You know, it's not over yet. And saying we have this clarity of that we know for sure it's ready to move on. I don't know. I don't think that's how I would paskin most of my Piskei Halacha and Hilchos Yom Kippurim or Hilchos Chilul Shabbos, etc. So I'm just saying, I'm trying to be consistent. Yes, I do think so. But again, I understand the emotion. I understand it. But just understanding the emotion doesn't mean that that's the right thing to do. Right? You know, to say that all the medical advice is politicized, you know, the government has responsibility to balance all the things, and the government is playing games. Okay, I'll give you that. Right? But I'm trying to... Besides the legalities of following the government, which are complicated because the whole thing is a mess, you know, our government is a mess. But there's a second issue over here, which is like, forget about the government for a second. What is the medical advice being? The medical advice is not is addressing what they see are the issues. Whether it's because of flatten the curve or not, like, oh, that wasn't their decision. That was a suggestion that they made. That, you know, that people have lost trust in that to some extent. But Jews in general are skeptical, and that's a mile, and it's a chassar. We learned many long time ago, don't trust authority, because authority usually kills you. So we become very independent, right? So in America, that's a little bit difficult, more difficult to play it out. Okay, everybody, so, okay, a little bit of intense conversation.